Life's good.
Never on.
Whoa.
Hard race.
Come on, Brent.
Life's good.
Got real close.
Got hair high, right?
Trying to hit 2/3.
Have they saved it for her? Yes, they have.
Welcome to Game of Stones, everybody. I am Sean Graham, Scott, alongside, as always. Hello, Scott.
Sean, good evening.
How goes it?
Oh, it goes pretty well. So I'm in my new recording space. I think I was here last time we recorded.
You were.
I'll tell you what, I spent the whole day down here working from home today. I'm in the basement. I'm really cold. I've been quite chilled most of the day. Let me see what the temperature is.
Okay. For context, this Scott is looking at the temperature in his basement. With the humidity today on my walk home, Environment Canada was telling me it was feeling like 35 or 36 degrees. I was quite warm.
Yeah, it's 19 degrees.
Ooh, that is cold. Why is it so cold?
Well, because it's the basement. I don't know. You're in the basement too, right?
I am in the basement at the moment, yes. But I just came down to do this.
Okay. So it's not probably 19 degrees down there.
No, I do have a space heater down here for the winter.
Mm.
It does get very cold down here in the wintertime.
Okay. That's something. Yes. I think we bought one for dad when he comes to visit because he always gets cold. So I'll use that in the basement come wintertime. It's manageable, but real chill.
Yeah. And I don't know. I do enjoy like fall, winter, you know, blankets and hoodies and all that. But for the few months a year where I put the hoodies away, I don't mind that either.
Yeah. Of course. The couch is supposed to come tomorrow. So I'm going to cozy up on the couch sometime this weekend, watch a movie or some baseball. We'll see.
Yeah, you got late baseball this week with the Blue Jays in what used to be Oakland.
Yeah.
Say that. All right, Scott, we're talking about the wintertime. We, this week, thought it would be fun to go through and talk about how our season went, but in the context of some of the broader themes associated with rec level curling, how rec level curling, where it's at in 2025, at least for us, and some of the trends that we've seen just talking to folks, people play at other clubs and other cities, just sort of the state of rec level curling, but through the lens of how our season went. So I have a couple themes here. And of course, Scott, I talk about it somewhat frequently with you guys who I play with, but I do keep somewhat detailed statistics.
Yeah, Sean, I think between the two of us, people would think I'm probably the more likely one to be keeping statistics, a little more statistically inclined. I remember scoring baseball games when I was a kid, and you still do this at all the pro games that you go to. But you do keep a pretty detailed list, and it's a good way for me to remember how many games we won and lost because, once it happens, whatever.
Sure.
Easy come, easy go.
Yeah, well, that's the one way to look at it for sure. So what I do is after every game, I come home and I put down what the result of the game was, what our score was, what the other team's score was, how many ends we played, and how many shots I took. Of course, usually that is a multiplier of two, but sometimes it's a multiplier of three. And on the very rare occasions where maybe I'm skipping, there could be an odd number in there as well. Like you throw one shot in the last end. So I like to keep track of that with the ultimate goal being how much does it cost me per shot throwing to play? Because I also keep track of what I spend at the bar and what equipment costs and registration costs. So this year for me, equipment wise was pretty easy. I only brought a broom head and not even like a brush. I needed literally the thing that goes into the handle of the broom. And then that thing got loose again. And then the people who I played with, you were there, Scott, when they won the 50-50 draw or a 50-50 prize at the Gordie Perry Spiel. And that broom that was the prize that night is in my house at the moment and nobody else seems to want it.
There you go. You have been needing a new broom given, you know, the old one coming loose a lot and malfunctioning. So, you know what, Sean, I wasn't at the Gordy Perry where you won it. So, you know, it's not going to be me that claims it.
Okay. I thought it was the night you played that they won, or was it the dinner night?
It must have been the dinner night because, or I might have been there, but I left in between the games.
Okay. Yeah. Things were happening.
Yeah, I was busy. Great. Great. So
yeah.
Pretty
so let's
low
actually,
equipment costs.
Yeah. So let's start there with equipment costs. I bought shoes, I think 4 years ago, maybe 3 or 4 years ago. I went for the first time with the toe dip. The drag foot, I noticed a difference when I got it. Also went with a thicker slider. First time going with anything other than what you get normal with the pair of shoes, the very thin one. That I really noticed a difference on. Mm-hmm. Not so much in being able to throw it harder, although I think I could throw it harder, but more in the control on the soft stuff, is that you can kick lighter and get a better slide, where with the thinner slider, you still got to kick kind of hard to be able to throw a draw. So that's something I really notice. The broom I currently have, I got 7 or 8 years ago, and that was the lightest broom I had ever had. And I remember with the old one, I had left shoulder on Bondspiel weekends, really started to bark at me a little bit. But the one thing, Scott, I've noticed in terms of equipment at the rec level, I think there's a lot more options now, and we can, I'll just mention, we're going to talk about this at some point, that Goldline is just bought Hardline, so that potentially could reduce some of the options. But compared to in the 90s, early aughts, when I started playing, way more options out there for rec level players to get really good equipment.
Oh, big time, Sean, big time. I remember when I started curling, it was kind of like you'd go to Canadian Tire and get a hammer or a push, like a brownie or something, and that was it, right? There was basically like one or two kinds. So when I went out west to go to school, a lot of people were using hair brooms, and I was like, oh, I'm intrigued by this hair broom. And so I had a horse hair broom.
Yeah, which makes sense out west, all the humidity in the air, the frost
from the west coast. Yeah. And so I actually left that at my old house, or I threw it out just before we left, something like that. But it had been my snow brush for the top of my car for the last couple of years. But that was basically it. And now you've got all these options. And I think the big thing is that you can order them online and have them shipped. I still have never done that. I've always bought it at the club or or at the store. But like for a lot of people that didn't live near a curling store, or they didn't have a store built into their curling center, there was really, you know, you just take what you get and see what you can find. I don't think Canadian Tire even sells brooms anymore.
Yeah, I'd be surprised. Maybe online. Like I've seen like Sport Check has them online. So I would assume that Canadian Tire, same family of stores, probably.
Yeah. So being able to order them online is, again, like the biggest leap for rec curlers being able to search for stuff. A friend of mine, Jamie, she went and bought new shoes this year, and she had to order them, but she had a problem with them. So then she was able to return them, but it was a bit of a hassle. So, you know, always having a store where you can get them is probably the best, just in case you run into problems. But again, like shipping is so easy and online ordering so easy that, yeah, it opens up the door quite a bit.
Yeah. And there are people too who will customize shoes for you. So you go get a pair of running shoes that you like, and they have people that'll make them specifically for you. So that, I think, is the biggest change in terms of equipment. I'm sure it's more expensive. It has to be more expensive than it used to be, but I don't find the prices that outrageous at the moment. Like a couple $100 for a pair of shoes, you know, you can get a broom for around $100 Canadian dollars, right? It doesn't strike me as terrible. I think the broom heads, whenever I go buy a new like brush pad, I'm always kind of like, really? but generally speaking, I don't find the equipment that badly priced given the longevity of most of it, especially if you take care of it. Like I bring my shoes home all the time. I make sure they get aired out. Take the gripper off the shoe after the game. That helps with the airflow and that helps with the longevity of the shoe. So doing those sorts of things, as long as you take care of the stuff, you can get a bunch of seasons out of them. And I play twice a week and I think I'm going into my fourth season with these shoes and they're still in pretty good shape.
Yeah, for sure. I think I've had three pairs of curling shoes since 1998.
Right.
So yeah, you can definitely keep them for quite a long time. I had leather ones that worked really, really well. They held up. The toe dip really helps to keep the toe from deteriorating as you slide on it all the time. So yeah, I think the investment seems a bit daunting at the start, especially if you're a beginning curler. You might not want to invest in shoes right away if you don't know that you're going to stick with the sport. But once you decide, hey, I'm going to do this, yeah, the return that you get is so much better than saying buying an everyday pair of shoes for $200 and then wearing them out in a year and a half or something. You can get 5 to 10 years easily out of a pair of shoes.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, Scott, let's move on to the warm room area, the post game atmosphere. This is something we've talked about on the show before. Certainly in Central and Eastern Canada, the tradition is that the winning teams buys the first round. The losing team offers to reciprocate afterwards. Not as big of a thing in the West in Canada. And I'll be honest, I don't really know what happens elsewhere in the world. But despite whatever the tradition is where you are, generally speaking, some sort of beverage after the game is customary, no matter what. Sometime, usually sitting with the team you played with. BC, not so much all the time, as you've talked about. But the bar. So this year, Scott, I only had alcohol, and by that I mean beer, twice after games. Once was September 30th, I think, or leading into September 30th. It was like the second game of the season for us. Or so maybe it was the one before Thanksgiving. Whatever it was. It was that night. And then there was a night in March. I think it was in March. Dominion City had just released their the Canadian beer.
Oh yeah.
Done in collaboration with all the other breweries across the country. So I had one or two of those. So overall on the year, because of that, I was only drinking like bubbly water type stuff after games when I would even buy anything. So my total bar tab for this season was $369.06. And as I look at the total from every night, I had a lot of $13 waters, it turns out. But that was down from my total from the last season, which was $438. And even that, the second half of that season, it's really after I moved. When I was less than a 10-minute walk from the club, it wasn't that big a deal. But now I'm a 35-minute walk or an Uber, and especially if I want to walk, I got to think twice about having a couple beers. Mostly because there's no bathroom on the way. And then the previous season before that, my bar total was $873.72. So I halved it last year, and then I'm down another 100 plus, or a little less than 100 on this season. So down to 370 for the season, which again, better than it was in terms of what the expenditure was, but still seems like a lot given that I didn't really have anything after games.
Yeah, that surprised me, Sean. It's, I guess we'll get into this a little bit later, but it must be because we were winning so much and you're buying other people drinks. I think that's pretty good. And let me ask you, did it impair your enjoyment of sitting around after the game at all?
Not in the least.
There you go.
Not in the least. That's the thing that going into it, like I was surprised because like during the years where, or the two seasons where the warmer wasn't open, right? Where you go play, go home. So the 2020-21 season, whatever that was, like 6 or 7 games is what we ended up getting in the 21-22 season when the warm room was closed. You know, I would come home. I wouldn't always have a beer afterwards, but I would have this feeling of like I should be having one.
Right.
Because I just curled and that's sort of what you do. And so I thought it would affect my enjoyment of the post game, but after a few weeks, I didn't even notice it.
Yeah, it was just that now your tradition after the game was having a city seltzer.
Yeah, and so just have one of those, go home. And I really did notice, again, it's partly because of where I live now, just the change in commute times, generally. I was way less tired at the end of a week this year than I was last year. So going and having, you know, a drink or two Monday after game, drink or two Thursday after the game. A lot of Fridays last year, by the time I got home, like I was on the couch asleep at 7 o'clock. Yeah. That wasn't so much the case this year. And that, I don't think it's entirely because of that, but it helps.
Yeah, it can't hurt. That's for sure.
Yeah. So yeah, I don't miss it. Or didn't miss it this year. So it's not out of any like principle stance or any like trying to save money. It was just literally like I would feel better going into work on Tuesdays and I was less tired at the end of the week. So I kept doing it.
Yeah, there you go. That's perfect, Sean. I would sometimes have my beer during the game.
Right.
And then after the game be like, oh, I'll have some water or whatever. Right. The other thing is you never eat at the club, right?
Never. I did not have anything at the club this year.
No. Yeah. I think the club's kitchen is fine. And there are a couple games where, you know, it was going to be really tight for me to get home and get back to the club. Or if we were playing early, I wouldn't have time to eat before. So I would order something after the game. So I think that for me was probably the more expensive items.
Right.
Just because there are like $15 to $20 each.
Sure.
Yeah. So I don't keep track. Maybe I'll start doing it, Sean. Maybe you've inspired me to start doing it this year. Yeah.
Takes two minutes. Yeah.
But my warm room experience was pretty good. I'd say over the course of the year.
Okay. All right, Scott, let's talk about the on ice results.
Let's go.
For this season. So, last season, just for some context to these numbers, we play together on Monday nights. And last season, I only keep track of the games I play in because if I'm not there, what do I care?
Who cares, right?
Last season, I played in 19 games and our record was 9-10 in those games. We scored 102 points, gave up 109 points, and we played 130 ends in those games, which led to an average of 6.8 ends per game. Last year was very weird in that we went 4-1 in the first round, then 0-5, then 4-1 again, and 1-4 in the last draw, because it's just a weird rule in our league where you go, we just went AC, which is very short, or CA. So this year, a little different for us, Scott. We went in the 19 games I played in this year, we went 12-7 with 114 points for, 101 points against in 134 ends, which meant we played an average of 7.1 ends per game. Take that, Dean, saying you can't play eight. You can do it. You can absolutely do it. We played 8 ends more often than not in the time that we have allotted for us. So Scott, given that improvement, I think this is our third year together with this particular lineup. How important do you think at the rec level continuity is for teams?
I think it really helps understanding everyone's expectations, right? And so I think this was actually, was it just our second year? Anyway, it doesn't matter. The expectations of like, okay, this is how somebody plays. This is what kind of time they need. For you at the front end, you know, like what you need to do to get going and be ready on time. I think it really helps. Everybody sort of understands each other and can communicate if we're going slow. So yeah, I think that's pretty important. And I think it was a big part of why we were more successful this year is because our communication was better and we just knew each other better.
Sure.
Being able to play eight ends also had to do with the fact that we were not getting blown out or blowing people out as much. Yeah. Right. So like if you only play four ends, that really brings down the whole average. So I felt this year, even though we did get up into A, I felt like the games were all more competitive. Like we had a chance to win every game. I never felt like we went into a game where it was like, well, we definitely don't have a chance now. I mean, maybe after the first couple ends, I would think that. But going into the game, I always thought there was a chance. So having that mindset and understanding our abilities, we were able to play more this year.
Yeah. So in looking at the total ends, first game of the year, we only played four. That's the only four ender we did. And that's because Megan was tired. We were playing Megan's team.
Oh yeah. And I wasn't there that,
yeah. That game. So score was 8-3 after four. And she's like, yeah, nah, I'm fine. All right. First game of the year. All right. Fair.
Late game. Yeah. Yeah.
And then there was two 5-end games over the course of the year. And then only 2 6-end games, but everything else, 6, 7, and 8. So yeah, a lot of close games on the docket there last year. And that is the main difference in terms of the total ends. I do think, Scott, this was our third year together because 2 years ago we were 12-6 on is the record on Monday nights.
Oh, then yeah. So
then it definitely has to have been our third year together. So yeah, I do think continuity. And what's interesting, we've talked about this with some of the lineup changes at the elite level, but I do think continuity is more important potentially at the rec level because everybody throws so differently and everyone's communication style is so different. At the elite level, they've seen each other throw all the time and they all kind of throw the same way. And even when there are differences because they play each other so much, they know, like,
yeah. And they have time to work on it, right? When you play once a week with somebody, it's like, well, okay, after a year of playing is when you're like, okay, I finally get what everybody does.
Yeah. So we've played together now for 3 years. And that's kind of like, in terms of the number of games, that's like, what, early November of a season for a new elite level team in terms of just volume of games, let alone practice time. So yeah, I do think it makes a big difference. And I really notice it more so now when we have a spare in, not that like when we have spares and there we've haven't had a bad one in terms of skill or just personality wise, but you notice that just a little bit, like you're more inclined to be like that little bit off or an inch or two off or like, oh, I missed the line or I missed the weight call a little more frequently. Like,
yeah.
Cause that sort of thing. Right. And I notice it more now than say when we started with this team, because that was happening more frequently when it was the four of us.
Right. Cause we were still getting to know each other too. And so, yeah, I think you're right. I've enjoyed all of the spares that we've played with, but every now and then the shots are just like just a little different and I have a little bit more trouble like calling the line right away or understanding. So yeah, the continuity definitely helps.
All right. So one other thing here, Scott, this doesn't really apply to us this year, but last year, as I mentioned, we went 4-1, 0-5, 4-1, 1-4. In the draws, or I'm assuming it's 1-4. I'm just assuming the last game was lost.
I think it was. Yeah. Cause we went all the way to C.
Yeah. Now this year wasn't so much the case, the 12-7, the longest losing streak we had was two games in a row, January 27th and February 3rd. Every other one was just individual losses. Longest winning streak was three games, did that twice over the course of the season. But if I shift over to my Thursday team, which in the 18 games I was at, went 9-9 in those games. We had a six-game winning streak from November the 21st through January the 16th and promptly followed that up with a five-game losing streak from January the 30th to March the 13th. Overall for that team, again, in the games I played, a 9-9, 91 points for 111 against. Really outperformed our expected total there. And overall, I had 253 shots taken in the course of the season. So 126 ends right there. So, Scott, do you think playing once a week at the rec level, can you actually have streaks? Or like, are streaks meaningful in any way at the rec? Like, do you have ebbs and flows, or can you have like an off season, like a bad year, come back and, or is it just so random because most people come out, play once, maybe twice a week, and this is all, there's no statistical value in those sorts of things?
I mean, I think everybody can get on a heater, you know, even if you're playing once a week, you get hot, you get rolling, you're feeling good. I know Glenn listens, Sean. Was it due to anybody's particular absence?
No. The winning streak went over in looking at it, because when Glenn's not there, I skip. So I do highlight the games where I skip. And by highlight, I mean I bold the text.
Okay.
So in the 6-game winning streak, I skipped one of the games. In the 5-game losing streak, I skipped 2 of the games.
Okay.
So both overlapped his and mine skipping.
Okay. Yeah, I think it can happen. I think like if everybody starts feeling good, you can just get on a heater and keep it going. I think it's a lot easier to stop a losing streak in the rec league, right? Somebody leaves, or you know, oh, I gotta miss tonight, where we're playing with three, everybody's tired, that kind of thing. Yeah, off games can happen, right? I wouldn't say anybody can beat anybody in either of those leagues, but a lot of the teams can beat a lot of the other teams.
Yeah, I think certainly the Monday league, maybe one or two exceptions to that. The Thursday league, there might be a couple more on the higher end who aren't going to lose the teams that are in D. I think there's a little more of a gap there, but yeah, Monday team, I would say out of the league, out of the 24 teams, I would say there's probably only 2-3 that you throw up in the A, and you'd say probably have no chance of winning a game.
Yeah. Probably something like that. Yeah. And we were one of those teams for a while, and then we played more, and then we won more.
Yeah. All right. Last thing here, Scott. Bondspiels. I played 3 Bondspiels this season, all just happenstance. Well, 2 of them intentionally, and the 3rd one by happenstance, all of which were one-day spiels for me. So I played in the Oktoberfest Bondspiel on October the 26th. Poorly named because Oktoberfest is celebrating the coming of October. It shouldn't take place in October. So, you know, Pierre makes another mistake there. Then the Valentine's Day spiel, which was February 15th. So, I mean, let's get it together here, people.
Pretty close.
And then the Gordy Perry bond spiel, which is like a 9-day bond spiel, but just so happened that the draw we got, there was 2 games on the Sunday, and that's the only day I was available. So I played in 3, for me, essentially one-day spiels. 6 games total as a result. 5-1 in those games. I skipped one of the games, which I've given us as a win, but the score was 4-4, but it was a point spiel. So I think we scored more points overall than the other team. So based on the ends. So I gave us the win in that, because I don't have ties on my spreadsheet here. So... gave us the win on that. But I think I've said this before on the show, Scott. I think I'm a one-day spieler now. I love the one-day spiels. Even if, you know, the location of the ones in this town aren't my favorite. Like, I just like it. The only part of the weekend spiel I really miss, I guess, is the Friday.
The Friday night,
The Friday night, like first game, you're excited, you're into it. But that's about it. And like, other than that, I love the one-day spiels now.
Yeah, pretty fun. We played together in that Oktoberfest spiel. And we put together a team of 6 so that we were able to rotate the players, which was even better, I thought. We played a split day. playing first and last game.
Yep.
And, you know, we had our Friday night experience in between the games. So,
yeah,
we sat and watched, heckled a bit, heckled the other sheets. And, yeah, we had a good time.
Yeah. And the Valentine's Day spiel was the same format. Same thing. I was on a team of six people, played two of the games. Mm-hmm. So even at that, like, not only am I a one-day spieler now, I'm a one-day, two-thirds of the event spieler, it seems like. And we did do an episode, if you missed it, at the Oktoberfest at the spiel. So we sort of profiled what the one-day spiel was like. And that was a lot of fun that day. So I'm in on that format. And I think at this point, it would take a lot for me to go do, certainly in Ottawa, to do a weekend spiel. Like, yeah, traveling, I'd still be up for. We didn't go to North Bay this year. Did it last year. That was a lot of fun. There's other spiels that are out there that I would like to go do that are weekend spiels. But an Ottawa-based spiel, or to be honest, like an Eastern Ontario somewhere-based spiel or Western Quebec. Yeah, I don't know.
Tough sell.
Feels like a big lift.
Yeah, well, maybe, Sean, I wanted to talk to you. Maybe we'll go to Montreal and try to do a one-day spiel at the Royal Montreal sometime next season.
I've never played there. Been there. Had dinner there when you remember. Yeah. But yeah, never played there. That'd be fun.
Yeah, that would be fun. And I'm still a member, so hey-o.
There you go. And Bon Cop, Bad Cop filmed.
Exactement.
Yeah, classic. So there you go, Scott. Overall, what would you say the state of rec curling is at this point? Like, if you were to compare it to 10 years ago, say your relationship to recreational curling, where are you at with it?
Sean, I'm liking it. I would say I'm liking it as much as I did 10 years ago. There was maybe a little dip, probably associated with the pandemic, where I was not enjoying it as much because just wasn't as much fun to play in a mask, sweep one at a time, not socialize after the game. They sort of, those are the kind of things that were important about curling to me. But as of right now, I'm really enjoying it. My body's feeling a little bit better too. I've been doing a lot of exercising and playing the two games that we played in the Perry on the same day when I played. I have felt no ill effects after, so
nice,
or during. So very good that way too. 10 years ago, I was playing in Victoria in like the Super League there and on the Men's League, enjoying both of them. I'd say, yeah, I really like rec curling. As far as the state as a whole, I think it's still pretty popular at the big clubs. Our club is full, right? It's very hard to get a spot. But overall, I'd say in the Ottawa Valley, it's like pretty, pretty strong.
Yeah, I agree. I think the biggest change I've seen is some of the smaller clubs across the country aren't doing great. And I think that's just part of some of the broader challenges you're seeing in more rural parts of the country with population decline. So I not necessarily like a decline in curling popularity in rural Canada, just the broader challenges of rural Canada and people moving more and more into cities. So there's that going on across the country. But the biggest change that I've seen in the city, and I think this is happening more broadly societally as well, is just the relationship between the sport and alcohol, I think, is fundamentally starting to change. Fewer people, I mean, most people will still have a drink, but more and more people aren't, or going to the seltzers or sodas or whatever. And I would say fewer people now are having a second round than 10 and 15 years ago. So I do think that is a change. I don't know how that really affects the economics of a lot of these clubs and a lot of these places, because the bar is a very important economic driver in keeping the lights on. And again, if you look at sort of what my total for the year was, like 2 years ago, my bar total was $870 or whatever I said it was. And the fees that I paid this year, or this last year, my total registration fee, $890. So you're kind of doubling. what the club take is for me as a member based on that bar. So, you know, I do wonder what the overall economics are going to be as this changes, because I know people are drinking less across society. And I think that is certainly true for younger people. Like people mm-hmm. like in university today are drinking less than back when you and I were in university.
Yeah, I was reading an article yesterday. Now I'm an old man because I'm referencing an article that I was reading, that more 16-year-olds in 1989 had tried alcohol than 20-year-olds now.
Wow.
Like or maybe it was 15 and 20, but it was pretty crazy.
Right.
And that was from America.
Yeah.
Those statistics, but yeah, it's a broader trend that the young generation is drinking less, and that could be impacting bottom lines for clubs all over the country.
Yeah, potentially. I mean, you see it with restaurants. They talk about how important the liquor license is in terms of maintaining margins and having the bottom line. So curling club's a bit of a different economy for sure, but it matters in terms of what those numbers are going to be and how are clubs pivoting, right? We've seen at our club a lot more of those non-alcoholic options, certainly still at a lower price point, but I think probably a similar markup, like a similar margin for the club on them. So if you can kind of make that work, then great.
Yeah. And there's less tax on those kind of items for the club too. So,
yeah. And we did have the, I would note the two places where I played this year during the GST holiday on beer, the beer price that I paid at the transaction point did not change during the GST holiday, which was not illegal. That was allowed. The vendors were allowed to do that. Mm-hmm. So they got the extra, whatever, 13% out of me.
Great.
So
you know, it went into the curling clubs.
I did my part.
Capital fund, Sean.
I did my part. So there you have it. I think overall it was a good year. The plan for us, Scott, is to run it back next year. The same is true on my Thursday team, which I'm very excited about. I'm hoping that, as has happened for most of the time that I've been playing in the Monday and Thursdays, just by happenstance, I've always had splits. So mm-hmm. the way it works where we play, you play either at 6:30 or 8:45. And I would say 85% of the time, I've had one game at 6:30, one game at 8:45. It's been rare the weeks where I've had two at 6:30 or two at 8:45. I've just gotten very fortunate in that regard. I really hope that continues this year, because it, 6:30 is a bit of a rush to get there for me.
Yeah.
So to do that twice a week, like a bit of a rush. 8:45 twice a week is tough, because I don't always go home before the game. Like sometimes I just stay a little later at work, get to the club early, maybe do something there, maybe get a bite on the way, do something. So like neither is great logistically, but by at least by having a split, it is a little more, it feels more manageable.
It evens it out, right? Yeah. Because if you're going straight to the club from work for an 8:45 twice in a week, that's tough. Yeah. Like there's always something, especially on a Monday, that you can do, little things you can do on your computer or whatever. But yeah, twice, that's tough. So hope it works for you, Sean. And, we'll do our best to position ourselves in the right draw.
Yes. Yeah. And I no longer have direct access to a draw master, which also proved very useful for a few years as well. So there you have it. That's our little summary of our season and rec curling overall as we see it. What did we miss out? Let us know. You can reach out to us, gameofstonespodcast@gmail.com, on the socials at Game of Stones Pod, except for Facebook, where it's Game of Stones Podcast. Of course, head on over to gameofstonespod.com. Past episodes are there, plus a link to the merch, and subscribe, rate, do all that stuff that helps the show. So Scott, that's fully into the summer season now. There was some news, as I mentioned, Goldline bought Hardline. I'm going to try to reach out to do something on that. We got a couple other summer episode plans on my notebook here. Is there anything you want to talk about curling wise as we go through the rest of the summer?
I'm happy to always go to your notebook of ideas, Sean. I would like to dig a little bit into some statistics.
Okay.
You know, you were talking about your statistics today. I would like to find some time to data mine some statistics for the season from the elite level of curling to see if there's any correlations we can draw between any of the statistics and winning percentage.
Okay. We will, we can get into that, especially because here in this Olympic year, there'll be a lot of talk about a lot of those statistics and what teams should be doing. We'll also talk about what we expect from this curling season at some point. And I got a couple other sort of interview ideas as we go through. But if there is anything you want to hear on the show, be sure to let us know. And to those of you who have emailed and I have not responded to because I'm terrible at doing that, I pledge that I will do it in July, which great. Is not a great pledge. It's not aggressive, but by the end of the month, I will do it.
Good, Sean. If you need me to do anything, you know where to find me.
All right.
In my freezing cold basement.
Yes. All right. Well, stay comfortable, Scotty. It's probably more for as cold as it might be. It's probably more comfortable there than it was outside today. But hopefully everyone's having a great summer. Summer is flying by. I did the math this week on weekends that are left and opportunities to go do stuff because I wanted to go into Quebec and see a couple of the baseball teams that are there in the Frontier League. And sat last night and did the math of the Saturdays that are left. And nope.
Not many.
not going to be able to do it this year. So hopefully everyone is having a good, fun summer. And we'll be along for the ride with you to talk a bit of curling as we go through it. So until we chat with you again next week, keep those brooms on the ice and don't dump that intern.
Make the final.